Fridays are awesome. I'm Carl Azuz. It's great to have you watching this April 8th. First up, we have an in-depth report for you. CNN recently got an exclusive interview with the head of the U.S. Terrorist Screening Center. It was created in 2003. It's an organization of several agencies run by the FBI. One of its jobs, to combine the U.S. government's information on potential terrorists into one list and to help screen people who enter the U.S. or try to travel internationally on an airline. For someone to be added to the list, U.S. officials have to have reasonable suspicion that he or she is connected to terrorism. Some civil liberties groups say the organization's standards need to be higher than that. They're concerned it's too easy for someone to be put on the watch list. But officials say if they raise the bar any more, they'll miss people who may be plotting an attack.
This means to me that the Terrorist Screening Center's mission will never be done. And it reminds us daily of the importance of what we do. The threat is ever present, and the remnants were put here to remind our staff of our mission, which is to prevent acts of terrorism. It keeps us mindful of the threat that is still out there. Each remnant or each artifact shows you the evolution of terrorism. This particular architecture was from the North Tower, and where you can see the bent areas is where the aircraft made entry into the tower.
Right there.
Right there.
Every day you come in and say, we're not going to let this happen again.
That cannot ever happen again.
One public perception about the U.S. terror watch list is that many innocent Americans with no ties to terrorism make it on those lists. What is your reaction to that?
I know that is a perception, but it is an incorrect perception. For the United States persons on the watch list, it is a very, very small part of the population of the watch list. U.S. persons on the watch list comprise less than 0.5% of the total population.
And how many changes are made to the watch list every day?
The watch list, I would just say for 2015, the watch list changed on an average of about 1,500 times per day, where in those 1,500 change transactions, some people were added to the list, some records were updated and modified, and some people were removed from the list.
What are some of the frustrations from your perspective, being the head of these terror watch lists?
It's concerning that our partners don't use all of our data. We provide them with tools. We provide them with support. And I would find it concerning that they don't use these tools to help screen for their own aviation security, maritime security, border screening, visas, things like that for travel. We find it concerning.
We've now seen two ISIS terror attacks in Europe, more recently in Paris, as well as in Brussels at the airport and the metro station. Would the U.S. watch list have prevented the terrorists identified in those attacks from slipping into the United States?
It depends. Now, and I say it depends because if they were on our list and they were properly identified, they may have been caught at our borders. They may not have been granted access to our country. So I can say that I would hope that our screening network would have caught them. Nothing's 100% foolproof. I will tell you that.
Did that information make its way into our watch lists? Did they share information prior to those attacks about these people? I'm just trying to get a sense of how that would work.
We were aware of some of the people.
Brussels right now is still on top of everyone's mind. We know of at least two bombers who are still on the run, possibly in Europe. How concerning is that to you, that these could be people who might want to make it into the U.S.? They haven't been publicly identified.
It's very concerning, and that's where the awareness and the vigilance comes in. We rely on our partners to look for them, conduct investigations and operations that help us identify them.
But in Europe, there are cases where perhaps information wasn't shared about someone because of privacy laws and because how does that impact the terror watch lists?
Well, it impacts the terror watch lists in a way that our sharing may not be as broad or inclusive as it could be
There's so many people leaving Europe to go to Syria to train, unbeknownst to European officials, that then just come right back. I mean, what's stopping them from making it into the U.S.?
It's highly concerning. We make sure that we know as much as we can. And we take that information and we use it the best we can to minimize threats to our communities. But we can't know everything all the time.
Let's talk about the migrant crisis, because, you know, the U.S. is expected to take in tens of thousands of people over the next several years. Your job will be to ensure none of those people are terrorists and make it into the United States in collaboration with other intelligence partners. How sure are you that you will be 100% successful?
Nothing's 100%. We will strive for the best we can. Nothing we can guarantee is at 100% level.
Do you think that the screening process in place, though, is as rigorous as it can be to prevent terrorists from making it in?
I'm pretty confident in us catching people who would try to come to this country for illicit purposes. But again, I can't say that we would be batting 1,000.
Yesterday, we announced a school in West Africa. Today, we're headed to the Far East. In the city of Jeonju, South Korea, it's great to see our viewers at Chungbuk National University. Thank you for watching this Friday. In the city of New York, in the state of New York, hello to the Lions. Columbia Grammar and Preparatory School is on the roll. And we're visiting some of our viewers in Texas. The Hornets are what the buzz is all about. They're at Hudson High School in Lufkin. You may want to sit down for this if you're not already. You see this chair? It's wooden. It's got some graffiti on it. It says Harry Potter. And it recently sold at an auction for $349,000. That's as much as a nice house. Why? Because this is the chair that author J.K. Rowling sat on while writing the first two Harry Potter books on her typewriter. To the auction's winner, Rowling wrote, quote, "My nostalgic side is quite sad to see it go, but my back isn't." Must have given her a shrieking back. Maybe it'd be better suited to a long bottom. Ah! But it makes you wonder, could the chair have sold for Voldemort? Someone probably had to Dumbledore budget and Snape a few competitors to Weasley their way into ownership. Right now, though, they're probably feeling pretty smuggle. Harry Potter puns, they're magical.